Once again to Dark Discussion Show, a place for discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I am fine at the moment, Phil. How are you? Great.
Well, could be doing better. This house has been hit with COVID. My six-year-old daughter got COVID, and so we're all quarantining right now, so we'll see how everything goes, but so far it's just a minor cold to her, so it looks like it's not affecting her at all. So she's one of those asymptomatic or pretty close to asymptomatic folk, but we'll figure out if anybody else gets it. So it could be better. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how's it going?
Good.
That's good. For folks who are curious who we are. We are, once again, Dark Discussions Podcast. Basically, we talk about genre films, so stuff like horror, sci-fi, fantasy thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, techno thrillers, midnight movies, drive-in fare, foreign films, foreign language films, cult films, and the like. Basically, we try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. Also, you can email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com or just go to darkdiscussions.com and press the Contact Us link on the website, and it's right up there at the menu, and send us an email that way as well. We will read your emails on the podcast. On darkdiscussions.com, besides news articles, podcasts, and all these other great things, Eric, what else can people find on that podcast?
On every page of the website, you can find a Patreon badge, and if you click on it, it'll take you to the place where you can sign up to be a patron. Patreon allows you to financially contribute to artists online, such as us. Producing the show is not free. We actually spend quite a bit of money on, you know, domain names and web servers and equipment and movie rentals and so on and so forth. So if you'd like to help offset the cost of producing this show, that's how you can do it. And we greatly appreciate any and all contributions. So you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or just look for the Patreon badge on any page of darkdiscussions.com.
Right. And today is January 6, 2022. So our first recording of the new year. And because it is the beginning of a new quarter, it's time to pick a Patreon pick. So, Mike, do we have the randomizer here? Mike.
The randomizer is ready.
All right. What do we got?
I need a drum roll, please. And the answer is 245.
245, and as you can see, we're very high tech here with the drum roll. and Eric has this cool mixer too, where you could just press a button and have.
These well, things. Nobody told me in advance, Phil.
That is a fair point, Eric. That is a fair point.
Did you say nobody told you in their pants?
No, that's not what I said.
All right. So, 245 is the film Heathers.
Oh, okay.
With the love of God, not the remake.
Christian Bale.
What? Yeah. No.
Christian Slater.
No, I mean Christian Slater, whatever. Okay.
Worried me there for a minute.
Yeah, sorry. I don't think Christian Bale.
I didn't even process the Bale. I just heard Christian went, nope, that's the right one.
Yeah, Christian Slater. And Winona Ryder, too, right? Winona
yeah. Mm-hmm. Great movie.
It's a great film. Yeah, I haven't seen
it. Yeah, I own it on disc.
Yeah, I do, too. Uh-huh. I have to check it out again, obviously, because it got picked. And I know this one has been on the list for many, many months this man has been trying to get this film picked, and finally he got it. So maybe he'll now shut down his Patreon and never give us money.
No, no,
that would be devastating. But it is David Michael Farley. David Michael Farley.
Nice.
Awesome. And it, I can't wait for a bunch of middle-aged white guys to sit around and talk about Heathers.
It'll be great. Dude. It's a great dude. I'm so into woman stuff with Taylor Swift and Superwoman. I mean, I don't even know her name. Jesus Christ! What Wonder Woman and the
clearly
She-Hulk.
No, clearly very into
and the She-Hulk and all this other good stuff that's coming. So
I'm really looking forward to She-Hulk.
Oh, it's gonna be awesome. Yeah, me and Barrett I think are doing a podcast on the show. So Mike, if you're interested, you can join us.
Yeah, Garrett Barrett, does he know what the show is about?
Yeah. She-Hulk.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily explain it all. Anyway.
What should I know other than
Mike's
that?
Just trying to cause trouble and he's failing, so let's move on.
Well, no, I'm not trying to cause trouble. We'll talk. Well, I don't want another, like, Lovecraft Country situation here.
Oh.
No. This is Marvel. Everybody knows the She-Hulk, dude. We, Barrett's the same age as me. We got comic books and she was one of the comic books that everybody knew about.
Okay, I'm just making sure you're up on where they are with her. Okay, yeah. I mean it had been for like 20 years, 30 years.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. But when she came out, we were kids, and so that was pushing big time. And this is the Eric's the one that's snoring, and he's the one that went and did a watching of every friggin' Marvel film in like 2 weeks just to catch up.
Not exactly true.
Well, 3 weeks.
No, I had seen most of them except for two.
And you've seen them all now, which is
no, I stopped at Endgame.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember you said that. Yeah. All right, so Heather's his pick, David Michael Farley. Thank you for your participation. Keep on donating; we would appreciate it. And throw in some new films. All right. So now, with that done, this is our special end of the year episode and not our top or best of that's coming out in a couple of weeks from now. But what's this episode, Mike, since this is something that you came up with a couple of years ago and we've been doing it now for about 5 years or 6 years maybe.
Yeah, I was trying to think of just with a different idea of a theme episode, and it was at the end of the year, and so it was, you know, as it goes, New Year's, and I thought, well, every year make New Year's resolutions. Well, what would be a resolution related thing that we could do related to the podcast? And the idea was, well, what about making a resolution to finally see one of those fucking movies that we always say we wanted to watch and never actually did, right? And never get around to it. And so it sort of turned into a knock the movie off your bucket list episode. And that's now, I think, is this our fourth year doing this?
Oh, maybe
fifth or sixth, to be honest. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember because I remember doing Night of the Hunter, I remember doing North by Northwest, and I remember doing Touch of Evil.
Yeah, you did Touch of Evil. Eyes Without a Face.
Okay, so there's four, so this is at least the fifth year then.
Yeah, at least the fifth year. Not sure, we'd have to look it up.
All right. So anyway, so that's the idea. And so each year we all pick a movie that we have never watched, in theory, and want to watch. And we don't tell each other what that movie is. And then we come on and we talk about it.
That's right.
So this is as much a surprise for us as it is going to be for you. And I hope it will be a pleasant one.
Indeed.
And if not,
me too. So I have to bring up one of our listeners, Travis Heckel. He listened to our Fat Man episode, and he wrote on his board saying, "Oh, Phil, this film sounds so awesome! I got to see it. I can't wait to watch it." And so he rented it, and so I texted him. I, you know, email or posted later, said, "So, what do you think? Right?" He goes, "Yeah, it was okay." I was like, "God damn it! I came for your head, Fat Man."
Yeah, but see, you raise expectations too high.
You do.
Wait, you do. You just.
It's your fatal flaw.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get so goddamn excited about movies that you like that people expect them to be the best ever, and when they're merely good, you get disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the worst is films I don't see, and I'm like all excited, and then I see them, it's like, ugh. That's happened a few times, like that Thelma Norwegian film we saw. But the one that paid off, that I hyped too much, was It Follows. That one paid
off. That was okay.
Oh, come on, dude. That was the best film ever.
Yeah, it was okay.
Oh, my God, dude. That's like my favorite horror film of the past.
I actually really liked it a lot. I just like this. I know.
Yeah, I get a little
excited. I didn't even know the truth until now.
I get a little excited. Anyway, so that's right. So tonight we're doing our bucket list episode, our New Year's resolution episode, whatever you want to call it. It's been called both. And Mike pretty much summed it up. And usually we go in alphabetical order by first name, but Barrett asked me if he could go last because he wanted to see how everybody else did it before.
Oh, that's right. This is his first time.
Yes.
Welcome to the club, Barrett.
Thank you.
So let's see. The first letter is Eric, Mike, Phil, and Barrett will go last. So, Eric, what do you got?
All right. I wasn't expecting to go first. I went back and watched a film that I've been meaning to watch for a while. Came out in 1961. It's an adaptation of an 1898 novella called Turn of the Screw. And the name of the movie is The Innocents.
Oh, my God. Dude, I almost chose that. I had Blu-ray out. I swear to God, dude, I have the Blu-ray. And I said, I'm going to go with this one. But I decided not to because I didn't feel like putting the Blu-ray in. And I decided to do
a Talk I decided about to, lazy.
Yeah.
I don't want to take a disc out of the shelf.
No, I had the disc in my hand. It's just that I didn't feel like watching it in my basement, and I said I'd rather watch it upstairs in my bedroom. So
okay, all right.
Yeah. So yeah, that is so dude. That would have been awesome if I had chose it.
Then it would have been funny if we chose the same movie.
Yeah.
Oh man. So the IMDb blurb for this is: a young governess for two children becomes convinced that the house and grounds are haunted. This is not available for streaming. I had to buy a disc.
It's Criterion.
It is Criterion, so I have no regrets about buying a disc because it's got a whole bunch of goodies on it that I have yet to get to. This movie, if anybody is interested in the art of filmmaking, you should definitely watch this. It was made in 1961, so color was available, but they chose to make it in black and white because they thought it would have better atmosphere that way. And if nothing else, this movie's a masterpiece in lighting. It's kind of funny. The studio insisted on them shooting in CinemaScope, which was a new aspect ratio that was new at the time and much wider than the director was used to. And the director did not want to shoot it like that. So what he did is he kind of cheated. And in a lot of the scenes, he put a filter over the lens that kind of darkened out the sides of the screen. So it showed as much as he wanted it to show under the old aspect ratio. Just a little trivia there. I will say that it stars Deborah Kerr, who's quite good, and also has a couple of child actors who aren't bad. The little boy in particular does a fantastic job. The screenplay, this was actually adapted from the novella to a play initially by William Archibald, who also helped write the screenplay. However, this movie, if it's not the first, I don't know my cinema history well enough to point to an earlier example of this. As far as I am aware, this is one of the first examples of a movie that asked that question that drives a lot of horror fans crazy at this point, which is something supernatural going on, or is this person crazy? So a lot of the movie hinges on that, and the director did not like the fact that William Archibald wrote his screenplay assuming that something supernatural was going on. He wanted to be a little more ambiguous, so he had Truman Capote chip in and modify the screenplay so it was more ambiguous, so it could be, you know, somebody going crazy or it could be something supernatural going on. Yeah, so I enjoyed this film. Like I said, the masterpiece in lighting, he darkened out the edges of the screen in some shots, and actually there's candlelight in a portion of the movie, and he had candles with four wicks in them made to make them super bright, just to raise the contrast there. It's really pretty interesting. So, if you watch this, a modern-day viewer will probably think, oh, well, this is old hat. I've seen this all before. Well, this movie is one of the reasons you've seen it all before. It's because it's a classic, and it has been imitated many a time. So I would recommend this as a maybe haunted house story that is worth catching up with for sure.
All right. And yeah, the director, John Clayton, he was considered one of the better directors of that time. And he went on to do the Robert Redford Great Gatsby film, which was a screenplay by Francis Ford Coppola, as a matter of fact. He also directed our future, what do we call it? Our future Patreon. He did Something Wicked This Way Comes. Yeah, the only reason we haven't done that one yet is because it's that still not available much places because Disney is holding on to it for some reason. Yeah, exactly. Disney, those commies. And actually, capitalist pigs. But yeah, that is interesting, yeah, because it is based off of that book, The Turn of the Screw by
Henry James. Turn of the Screw has been adapted like half a dozen times, the most recent of which is actually the Netflix series, The Haunting of Bly Manor. Even in The Innocents, this movie, that they refer to it as Bly. So, yeah, the most recent adaptation, Turn of the Screw, is The Haunting of Bly Manor on Netflix. I tried watching it. It didn't hold my interest, so I bailed on it. But yeah, The Innocents, 1961, it's a classic. And if you're like me and you don't like old movies and you don't like black and white movies, I'm right there with you, but this is a good one. You should check it out.
Yeah, and it actually made it to Cannes Film Festival, for folks who care about those things. Also, Deborah Kerr, I've never knew how to say it, but I'll go with you, Eric. Deborah Kerr. She's probably most famous for the makeout beach scene in From Here to Eternity with Burt Lancaster. Mm. So everybody's seen that scene in, you know, great scenes in movie history or something. So she's obviously in that, or known for that, I should say. And yeah, she actually passed away in 2007. Barrett, have you ever seen this film?
I have not.
Have you ever heard of the film?
No.
Okay. What about you, Mike? Have you seen this film?
I have not seen it. I have heard of it.
I know it's always on lists of best ghost films of all time, and also in a lot of best horror films of all time, especially ones that are before 1969. And it did come out basically the same time frame as Psycho and various other films and whatnot.
I have it is, the turn of yeah, the screw, but I have not heard of this movie itself.
Now, speaking of Turn of the Screw, Eric, have you ever read that novel?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, are you curious now to maybe check it out? Or?
Well, probably not.
yeah, I mean, it is one of those old English books.
I have a rough time reading that stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's see.
I haven't read Dracula or Frankenstein either. Those are all things I should probably read, but I haven't.
Yeah, I tried to read Frankenstein and I bailed. Maybe I'll go back to it sometime. But I did read Dracula, and Dracula was pretty awesome.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, because it's like journal written. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I definitely recommend, if you can, they've got some beautiful annotated versions that are, so there's stuff that, just because it's been 200 years, you know, there'll be references and things that.
Well, the thing is, I have absolutely no excuse for not having read Dracula and Frankenstein, because Dan gave me copies of both as a gift one year.
And now you're admitting you've never read them.
Awesome.
You do it to Dan too, and not just me and everybody else.
Well, you saw Wes Craven's Dracula 2000, right? It's
I did
the same thing. It's basically the same.
Oh,
exactly okay. The same.
I don't know about that word.
I like Dracula 2000.
Yeah, no, actually, Coppola's Dracula is probably the closest to that novel. But either way, we're not talking about Dracula. Anyway, on a side note, this film here, Eric, so did you think it was mental illness, unreliable narrator, or do you actually believe it was a ghost?
I personally think it was a ghost.
Okay.
And as such, there's a certain implication. I didn't want to say anything because it's kind of a spoiler. But there's a it's a very vague implication, because I'm sure it would have put people in an uproar in 1961. But there's an implication of something going on that's really pretty naughty, for lack of a better term. So if you watch it, tell me if you picked up on it.
Yeah. Maybe I'll take a look at it now. I was planning to, as I said, but I don't want to go and watch the film in the basement. So
get down in the basement.
Indeed. So Deborah Kerr again, was nominated 6 times for Academy Awards, and holds the record for most Best Actress Oscar nominations without a win.
Wow!
Wow!
Yeah, and she never won an Oscar, but she did. Yeah, but she did win 3 honorary awards. She got the Career Award, Oscar Award, so similar to Ray Harryhausen, so Academy, and Roger Corman, and a few others that got the Academy Award for Career. And then she also got honorary awards from Cannes and BAFTA, or BAFTA.
Before she died, I hope?
Yes, all in 1994.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah, so she was able to enjoy it for 13 years. So yeah, that's pretty awesome. And for the director, Mr. Clayton, I don't know if he's actually a British guy, and Kerr, or Carr, Kerr? Yeah, it's Kerr. She is British as well. Clayton, like I said, he did a lot of films, but I don't know if he's won any awards or even been nominated.
According to the trivia on IMDb, Deborah Kerr always regarded this as her finest performance in this movie. So take that for what it is, considering she got nominated 6 times for other stuff.
Suck it, other stuff.
Yeah.
You like this better. You were trash.
I don't
know what to do.
I don't know what to say. Yeah, I'll just let that one go. Unfortunately, I don't know if you may be able to get to watch it on the Criterion Film Network, because there is
that's possible.
Yeah, but otherwise, you're right. It's one of those.
I don't have that, and Just Watch only pulls up what I have. So.
Sure. So Criterion owns the rights to it for at least a good amount of time, similar to like Suspiria. When Suspiria was unable to be on disc for like 10 years because Criterion had it.
For anyone that likes to collect physical media, though, I would totally recommend the Criterion Blu-ray.
Yeah. I got it right here in front of me, and it's, like you said, it's loaded with stuff. So, Blu-ray special features. Let's check it out here. So if I can bring up my light. There we go. 4K digital restoration with uncompressed monaural soundtrack, introduction by cultural historian Christopher Frayling, audio commentary featuring Frayling, new interview with cinematographer John Bailey about director of photography Freddie Francis and the look of the film, which you did mention, Eric, new piece on the making of the film featuring interviews from 2006 with Francis again, so Freddie Francis, the director of photography, editor Jim Clark, and script supervisor Pamela Mann Francis, most likely the wife of Freddie Francis, and also the trailer, plus an essay by critic Maitland McDonough. So 100
and minutes. I just confirmed that it is available if you have access to the Criterion service.
Oh, there you go. So if you want to rent Criterion for a month, pay the $10 or $8 or $5 or whatever it is, just to see one film, it may be worth it because that's the same price. That's actually probably cheaper than seeing a film at the theaters.
By the way, somebody on Facebook was bitching because Netflix or someone had taken off his show off of streaming they like to watch. He's like, does anyone know, you know, like, where, how I could watch this now? Like, yeah, buy the fucking disc.
Yeah. Or you do what I did on January 1st, 2021.
Oh, God, I know what's coming.
I went to
Peacock
to, for The Office, because The Office moved from Netflix to Peacock. And there you go. The only reason we have
Peacock. But that wasn't the show he was looking for, Phil.
I know. Did you buy the disc? Yeah, he bought the disc.
You would think just watch would, like, cut a deal with these companies to get paid money so they could say, hey, shithead, if you really want to see it, why don't you pay for Peacock?
Indeed.
These are the ones you have. This is what you could be watching if you paid up and weren't such a cheap bastard because you only subscribed to 10 services. If you subscribe to all of them, you could watch. You think there's a thing there to, like, entice people. Nope, they only show you what you got. I think it's a missed opportunity.
Now, The Innocence is on Blu-ray on some online retailers for $19.99, which is a pretty good price for Criterion. So,
yeah,
just a heads up. And again, make sure it's the Deborah Kerr, Jack Clayton one, because there is another, The Innocence. That's an older film.
Pay attention to the date. This one's 1961.
I almost made that mistake. That came out at the, like, 2 years ago? Or at the beginning of this year?
The Turning. That was the horrible. Turning. Yeah, I saw that in the theater. That was awful.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah, because we were discussing whether or not we would do that as an episode. And you said,
as a matter of fact, I heard it from you.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, and that one's for $10 on disc right now for anybody that wants to torture them.
I'm going out on I got to make a prediction, and that is in 10 years that will not be available as a Criterion edition.
indeed. Criterion
$3.
Criterion has gone on to now do midnight movie. Classic films and genre films as well. And The Innocence most certainly is a genre film, but The Innocence would most certainly be considered true classic cinema. For sure. Indeed. And it's sickening to know that film is now, good Lord,
60 years old.
Jesus. 61. Very depressing.
Well, and now it's off my bucket list. I have seen it.
Indeed. All right. Anything else? Anybody else want to have any further comments on The Innocent? The Innocent. All right. Or Innocence, I should say. But that's with a T-S, not C-E.
Yes.
Just a heads up.
Innocence.
Innocence as in plural, not being having innocence.
Yes.
All right. Sounds good. So thank you, Eric, for sharing that with us. And
you're welcome.
All right. Very good. And I actually think someone picked that as a possible patron too, to be honest.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right, so let's go to M for Mike.
M for Mike. All right, so having gone with classy fare such as Touch of Evil and North by Northwest. I decided I had to step up the game and go with a film. The only way you can improve on something like these legendary Oscar worthy films is there's only one way to step up, and that's to have a film with an exclamation mark in the title.
Oh boy.
And so this is a film directed by Jack Arnold, who directed such science fiction genre films as It Came from Outer Space, Creature from the Black Lagoon, and The Incredible Shrinking Man. And I didn't do any of those because I had already seen them before, and it would be a betrayal of the pact that we make for this episode.
Mm.
Outer
Space is pretty good. Oh, Tarantula is good.
And what I watched was that film, in fact, Tarantula.
Nice.
That's the one that takes place in Mexico, right?
They all take place in Mexico. They're all in the California desert, doubling for someplace else.
Actually, no, I never seen Tarantula. It was the Scorpion one. What's the one? The Scorpion?
Black Scorpion?
I don't know. Yeah, it's not Tarantula, because otherwise it would be called Scorpion.
Yeah.
There's not much less Scorpion in this film than there is Tarantula.
It stars John Agar. You know who John Agar is?
It stars John Agar, Mark Corday. And Lewis G. Carroll.
It also has. I have a piece of trivia. If you don't have
I know he was a B movie guy.
He was the Thing.
He was the Thing. I thought no,
The original Thing.
No, that was.
John Agar.
Gunsmoke.
What?
No, that was Gunsmoke. Liking that's name.
At some point, you're going to need to let Mike talk about this movie, Phil.
Yeah, The Thing from Another World. All right, I'll look it up while you continue, Mike. Sorry.
Well, I mean, he didn't play The Thing if he was in The Thing.
Oh, you're right. It was James Arness. What a dumbass.
It was James Arness, right, okay. No, he was in, he was in a ton of genre stuff, But anyway, so this is considered one of the better giant bug movies of the 50s, and yes, there are enough of them for them to be their own genre. Them is probably considered to be the pinnacle, I'm guessing.
I wouldn't argue with that.
Them.
Giant ants.
Them. Isn't it them? With another?
Yeah. Them! With an exclamation point.
Oh, what was the one that was the centipede that was in the water? That was an awesome one.
Centipede? I don't know.
I've never seen it.
The creature that the class, I don't know.
So Mike's going to tell us about Tarantula.
Tarantula is an interesting film in that it starts with a mutated man in his pajamas dying in the desert.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
In his slippers. It's weird. This is a very straight. I got to be honest. I didn't know what I was in for with this film. Like a lot, I will say up front.
Oh, the
like
monster
a lot of,
challenged the world. That was the one, sorry.
Like a lot of these films, it probably is best watched for the first time if you're 7.
Right, that's when I saw it.
And maybe even more so if you were 7 50 years ago or so, 40 years ago. Because I don't know like if a present 7-year-old would appreciate,
right,
you know, having watched Marvel movies and stuff where this is all, you know, very commonplace, you know, where the CGI and video games and the rest, that they would necessarily appreciate the occasional bug matted onto a picture of a barn or something. You know, it's just, it certainly has a charm if you are a fan of this genre. And I would consider myself a fan of 50s science fiction, even if it is creaky in a lot of ways. And definitely dated. You know, there's a comment in there about, say, I knew this, where there was a woman here to be the intern for the doctor, for the scientist. And he's like, I knew this was happening once they gave women the right to vote. You know? And you remember that at the time, it hadn't been that long since they'd given women the right to vote. So it wasn't an entirely out of place comment. It was just a little cringy.
Right.
Anyway, the idea is I also this may hold the record for the most number of times acromegaly is mentioned in a film. because they try to blame the death of the person on acromegaly, which is a hormonal disorder.
Mm.
The idea is that there is this naturally mad scientist who is trying to solve the world's hunger problem by creating giant animals. And so, of course, he uses radiation to create a nutrient to create giant animals, including a giant spider, which I don't understand how that's solving the world's
hunger.
Well, he was just trying to test it, and it got away from him.
Well, it was going to be, the idea was to testing on animals, and then they would lead up to testing on people. But, you know, because that's really the closest thing biologically to a human being is a tarantula. But he's got rats and guinea pigs. And I laughed because, look, I understand this is a thing that was made for kids in the 50s. This is me as an adult. I'm not criticizing the movie. I'm just saying I laughed at it. Where they're like, oh, look at this baby mouse that we injected with the nutrient form. It's only 3 days old, and you're just looking. It's a full-grown rat. It's not a baby mouse. It's a full-grown rat, you know. But doing – it's, you know, it was doubling as a baby mouse, you know. And this is – how old would you say this rabbit is? It's like after a few weeks, they all look the same. But, you know, so they make a giant rabbit, and they make a giant guinea pig, and they make a giant – but it really works well for the tarantula. The monkey doesn't seem to be affected, but the monkey just didn't seem to like the scientist dude. Probably because he kept trying to stick him with his needle. But it turns out the scientist who died, unlike all the animals that grew into giant, like normal but in giant sizes, the scientist just turned into this weird, funky, like mutated person.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad makeup for the time. You know, you got to remember
this was actually pretty good.
Back before you had your like Rick Bakers and, you know, your Richard Chambers and the like the latex makeup and all this stuff that they just really went off on in the 70s and the 80s. The makeup itself for that was really good, but you're going to see a movie about a giant tarantula. So it's weird to see these other things in the menagerie, right? So it's got all this other stuff. And so I give that a lot of credit because it has more than just tarantula. Probably my biggest gripe is that there's not enough tarantula in a movie called Tarantula.
Mm-hmm.
Exclamation.
It looks good when you see it, though.
It doesn't look bad. So the idea is that there's a little bit, not a murder mystery, but a mystery because two of the scientists he's working with had like gotten, I don't know, had a party while he was away and injected themselves. And that goes badly, and so they die.
Yeah, scientists don't know how to party.
Yeah, and so the first one dies and is discovered and goes to the local doctor, who of course has to be the male lead. So he's young and attractive and flies a plane. And he's out on the make, right? It's like, what's the good word? It's like, I think that's like his first line in the movie. What's the good word, Doc? I got a couple of twins and they're waiting. It's like, okay, that's, you know. So he investigates the deaths and it leads him to this doctor and it doesn't sit right with him. But the doctor, before the second scientist dies, he injects the third final scientist unknowingly, and the final scientist like buries the body up and covers it up anyway. So we get to watch him slowly decay over time or mutate, and it's kind of, again, surprisingly subtle makeup for the era. I think it works really well. So I liked that quite a bit. And I think that is Leo G. Carroll is the mad scientist, who you might know from the science fiction double feature is mentioned from Rocky Horror Picture Show. Leo G. Carroll was over a barrel.
Mm.
From that line is an actor. And his assistant is Mara Corde, is the actress who is a bee queen, and then she kind of had a I wouldn't say she had a comeback, because that would imply that anybody noticed her in these movies, but she did get back into making movies later on, because she's in 4 or 5 Clint Eastwood films, for a reason, because she was friends with him. And so he cast her in some of his films, including being in the,
speaking of which,
in one of the Dirty Harry films. But anyway,
she's the waitress that spilled the coffee on him in Sudden Impact. Oh my God, that's her. That's awesome.
Yes, it is. Well, and this will come up to be a big thing. So anyway, so they're investigating that and dealing with that. And while they're doing that, every now and then you cut away to watch see footage in the desert of a spider matted onto the desert, walking around and super enlarged, which is kind of funny because for the first hour or so, this giant tarantula does nothing nobody sees it because because there was the fight in the lab and the spider gets away. So it's weird because it does drag out, even though it's less than 90 minutes. So it should be moving at a good pace. It's like you're waiting. The spider is just saying, like, I got to wait for the final act. And so he just wanders around. Nobody notices it. He's like, I'm going to walk over here and I'm going to walk over there and I'm going to walk over there and I'm going to walk. And then it's like, OK, now can I attack the barn? And then he attacks the barn and kills some livestock. And then he attacks like a couple of old men who are out. I don't know if they were hunting or what they were doing, rustling cattle, whatever it may be. That's where it starts coming in. And then that leads into the investigation for the giant spider. And of course, that gives us the classic 50s scene of, let's go find the other professor who's going to sit us down and show us some footage from a local biology class about tarantulas so we can have a lesson about the biology of tarantulas. And we have to remember, of course, this is in an era where not everybody would have like access to National Geographic or the Discovery Channel, and you would see these things all the time and we could be informed of these things, and people didn't have pet tarantulas, so it was all kind of exotic, and you forget that people have to be told these things. And anyway, so this all leads to a final culmination with the giant tarantula in the desert. And of course, everything they do goes wrong. Nothing works. Nothing can stop the tarantula. But thankfully, they called in the U.S. military. And who does the U.S. military call to come in and drop napalm on the tarantula? None other than Clint Eastwood to fly in at the end of the movie and save the day by dropping napalm on the tarantula.
And I think that was his first screen appearance.
And now we know how he became friends with the actress.
Right. Because I believe he's also in, I think it's Revenge of the Creature.
Yes, he is.
Which he also directed, which is, again, just a walk-on background role.
You know who else was in that film? Was Lee Van Cleef, I think. And so I think that's how they became buddies, Clint and Lee Van Cleef, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
But, you know, if you're going to call somebody to kill a giant tarantula, Clint Eastwood's a pretty good choice.
Well, that's the funny part of it, right? I mean, like, if you're going to have – just to have, like, the random guy show up to blow up – because you could do that in the 50s. The idea of having this, like, personal connection between the monster and the person, and have the person being the one to kill the monster, it's just not there in a lot of it, because you're still coming out of World War II and everyone's still kind of in love with the military. JFK hasn't been shot yet. And there's this idea that government is actually competent, you know, right, that you have the monster, you have the Nazis, you have the Japanese. Oh, no, what will we do? Who will save the day? And Harry Truman steps in and says, I have a nuclear weapon. Boom. You are saved. And that's the narrative. And that's kind of the story with every 50s giant bug movie, right? You know, it's just envelop a secret weapon or something that comes in and boom, blows them up and saves the day. So, I mean, it's fun. An oxygenator. Yes. In Japan with
Godzilla.
Gojira. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's a fun film. It is obviously a cheesy film. you have to have an appreciation for it. I actually really like the effect they do using a matte painting. They use a giant prop of spider legs burning in the background. There are a few places where they use prop spider parts, but most of it is an optical effect of just of a, which isn't great because it's a very primitive optical effect, but it kind of works.
Mm-hmm.
If you like your giant monster movies,
I mean, this is spider's one that a I would, spider, so it looks great as a spider, but you can tell it's being, you know, imposed.
Yes, absolutely. And I got to say, I was wondering, like, how did they get it to? I had a pet tarantula once. It didn't move a lot. Why is this one moving as much as it did? You kind of want, and I mean, there's tricks to it, and you blow air on it, or, you know, put it on a hot plate and makes it run. Yeah, okay, so yes, it is his debut film, but Revenge of the Creature was also, Revenge of the Creature was Clint Eastwood's Deadwood debut film. That was 1955, and Tarantula was also 1955, so it's like neck and neck.
Okay.
It was neck and neck, it was right there.
So this was his debut then?
No, it was Revenge of the Creature was his debut.
Gotcha.
Or he's just like standing in a hallway or something looking on, confused and going, I'm Clint Eastwood, why am I here?
Squinty.
Why is everybody staring at me? I'm an extra, look somewhere else. It's like, but you're going to be famous in like 20 years.
That's right.
So, you're
gonna be the man with no name. You're gonna be Harry Callahan.
Yeah. So I liked it. I recommend it. If you're within that small group. I will say for Jack Arnold films, Creature from the Black Lagoon is better, and The Incredible Shrinking Man is better. I have not watched It Came from Outer Space in a very long time.
That's a really good one.
It might be. I know it's considered a classic, but I haven't seen it forever. He also, really his biggest impact is probably the 25 episodes of Gilligan's Island that he directed, along with his 8 episodes of The Love Boat. Guy actually has a very impressive, like, and very long career as a director in Hollywood. A lot of TV stuff. Did like some episodes of The Bionic Woman. Did an episode of Wonder Woman. We can joke a little bit about it and laugh about it, but hey, you know, he worked. Man, he worked, yeah. And he worked on some very successful shows. And so he must have been liked, right? Because there's a lot of people that would be willing to direct stuff.
He would not keep getting hired if he was incompetent.
Right.
That's true. Unless that, or, you know, maybe he had the dirt on somebody. That would be the other problem.
Maybe blackmail material.
He was pretty good. He was pretty good. I mean, it came from outer space. Was the aliens look really evil, but they're really good. And they crash mistakenly, so it's like an ET thing. And so this reporter and a couple other people try to help them, and the people are the bad guys because they want to, you know, what's this? What's going on? What? You know, and so they finally escape. It's really good. It's
I don't need to watch that movie now.
I didn't really give you the details. It's really good. But of course, it takes place in the middle of the desert because it's cheap.
Oh, here you go. 15 episodes of the Brady Bunch.
Here's a story. You got to stop listing television shows I know the theme songs to.
Rawhide, 4 episodes?
That one I don't know.
Dr. Kildare, 3 episodes?
My heart's calculating. Go. My true love will be waiting. You were from the Blues Brothers? I mean, come on.
Four episodes of Love American Style?
I'm not familiar with that one.
Hardy Boy and Nancy Drew Mysteries, 2 episodes?
No.
The Misadventures of Sheriff Lobo?
No.
Oh, that Nancy Drew was pretty good. That chick. What's her name?
That chick.
Was in Poseidon Adventure, and she was in
I just watched the Poseidon Adventure. It doesn't hold up.
The Lady in Red, she was in that one, too.
Here you go. 2 episodes of Buck Rogers of the 25th Century.
Oh, you said it didn't hold up, Eric?
No.
Oh, my God, it does. It's such a
great It's so slow.
Oh, my God, no, that's the best part. Pamela Sue Martin.
It's an ocean liner. How fast do you expect it to go?
That was it. But, and then Pamela Sue Martin's career kind of flushed because she did Playboy, and It backfired. Usually it helps your career.
What are we even talking about anymore?
We're talking to Nancy Drew, Pamela, and Poseidon Adventure, Pamela Sue Martin. She was and Lady in Red, the Carmen film.
This is the interesting thing. This is like this little movie, but there's like you could play like 6 degrees of Clint Eastwood with this. You know, it's like
right
because there's all these connections and all these like career people, like just workmen in Hollywood who made all these. Yep. Just crank stuff out.
Clint was loyal. He brought his people in. He was always good to his friends.
Yeah.
You could look up Leo G. Carroll, you know, and look at what he did, and Man from U.N.C.L.E., you know, and, you know, like Shirley Temple story. I mean, these people have hundreds of credits. Right, most of which we've never heard of before.
Well, you know, it's just how it is. So, you know, a lot of like comedies are forgotten. You know, I mean, Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis films. You know, that no one remembers many of them, and they were huge hits back in the day. The Elvis comedies, the Beach Bingo comedies. All, you know, just how it is. I mean, how many novels do we remember from 100 years ago? It's only the cream of the crop for some reason. You know? Same with music. It's all how it is. What are you gonna do?
So, did you enjoy Tarantula, Mike?
Yeah, I did. I think first of all, I enjoyed the fact that I could see it. So, for listeners at home, over Christmas break, I had an
eye thing.
An eye thing that I was functionally blind for like 4 days. So that sucked. So this was the first thing I watched that I could watch. And I liked it.
And you're like, oh my God, I can't see color.
but I would certainly recommend it for a select group of people.
Yeah.
And again, it's you have to have an affection for either giant monster movies and or 50s science fiction films. Because if you can't put yourself in the time of and place of that to appreciate the work that went into it, because they didn't have CGI, that they didn't have Rick Baker, or Phil Tippett or something, then these weren't given huge budgets. You're not going to enjoy it.
What did Tippett do besides the dog?
Phil Tippett was
Tippett.
He did a lot. I know he did like a lot of Go Motion. He did the Dragon and Dragon Slayer.
That movie is awesome. I saw that.
He did some of the stop motion work in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, I believe. Like he did the Rancor and the Tauntaun. And the,
did he do the AT-ATs?
I think so.
Nice.
Yeah, those are pretty cool.
For what they're doing, this is the kind of thing where I would love to see them. I guess that you could argue they did with Eight-Legged Freaks, right? But I could almost like I would almost love to see them like make Son of Tarantula. Just make a sequel to this.
Son of Tarantula.
Find out what happened to the giant guinea pig.
Yeah.
And
I don't know why I thought that was so funny, but I really did.
And I mean, you could have fun with it, right? I mean, yeah, could have, and you could in a way that sort of like an Austin Powers thing, right? Is that you're kind of make fun with it, but not make fun of it.
They
right,
kind of so. Already did that with a movie called Big Ass Spider.
Was another one. That was surprisingly good.
Yes.
And I don't know if I'm sitting here and I'm in the mood to watch a giant spider movie, I got to be honest, because of the general lack of spider in Tarantula, I am probably going like Eight-Legged Freaks or Big Ass Spider first.
Eight-Legged Freaks, but I love Big Ass Spider. That movie's pretty awesome.
I've not seen that. I'm going to have to see that now.
Eric, you said you haven't seen the other one?
No.
Gotcha.
Oh, we should. It's got Dewey.
I'm not saying I shouldn't. I'm just saying
it's
I had
a lot of giant spiders.
Speaking of Dewey, he's coming out with a new movie very soon.
Yeah. Phil, forgot to take your ADD medication today.
I don't know that any of us have been particularly on point.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. And part of it is me deliberately throwing breadcrumbs in front of Phil's nose.
Indeed.
Do that without thought.
Well, put it this way. I've been stir crazy for the past week being locked up, quarantining for COVID. So it's been.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So talking to adults rather than your children.
Right. Oh, my God, dude. I've had to be singing along. Speaking of Dean Martin, that's the reason why I brought up Dean Martin, is because my wife was singing L'Amore, and so the kids wanted to hear it, so I put it on YouTube, and so all day we've been just singing that song. That's Amore.
I'm so glad I don't have kids.
That's Amore. But I did get in doing banjos from Deliverance. I put that in. And so my little... The one that has COVID comes running in with her little ukulele and starts playing along with it with the YouTube of Roddy Fox. Yeah, so it's kind of funny. Is it Roddy or is it Ronnie? I can't remember.
I don't know.
But and then of course the three of them. Well, my older keeps on asking because I said, yeah, he's with Ronnie Fox, he's with Jesus, and Ned Beatty, he's with Jesus, and Burt Reynolds, he's with Jesus. But the other guy, John Voight, he's still alive. They go, oh, really? And then, of course, 3 minutes later, so, Daddy, that person's with Jesus? Yes, he's with Jesus. and then, what was the thing?
Does she actually understand who Jesus is?
Yeah, she does.
Okay.
She's doing the lessons. And then she goes, why is that John Voight guy smoking a pipe? And it's like, well, back in that day, people smoked.
Hey, they didn't know it was bad for you.
Yeah, and then why is that man with Jesus, the one you said that was called Burt Reynolds, he's smoking a cigar? Well, they just did. Oh, okay. So it is what it is. So, yeah, I've been.
Until she watches Die Hard. Daddy, why's that man have a gun on a plane?
Yeah, that is good enough. Yeah.
So, they're smoking on the planes?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I'm playing the Dean Martin for it, and I say this is called lounge music. So I played like Under the Sea and New York, and so a bunch of old stuff. Oh, Al Jolson and so forth.
You didn't play any of Richard Cheese?
I have not. But wife, yeah, lounge music, girls. That's when everybody would drink martinis and smoke cigarettes at the bar. And she goes, oh, that's weird.
Do you know? Who Richard Jesus?
I do. He did Dawn of the Dead. Yeah. He did Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah. Down with the Sickness.
Down with the Sickness, exactly. That was awesome. That movie's the best. The best. Sorry. Okay.
Tarantula.
Anything else anybody would want to bring up with Tarantula? As Mike said, breadcrumbs and 6 degrees. So anything else, Mike, about Tarantula?
No, I am done. There's really not a lot to talk about. Again, nice visuals.
It did come out on Blu-ray recently, though.
It did come out on Blu-ray, Kino Lorber. It would not shock me because like The Blob came out on Criterion. It would not shock me to one day see Tarantula in Criterion. Have they even hit triple digits yet on Criterion?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Because Criterion is known for numbering their spines, and that's how they get people to buy every one of those, because they get a couple of OCD people. And they have to buy Scream because it's number 13 or whatever
OCD
it is.
OCD people are fucked.
They have to buy Scream number 13?
Well, Scream was a Criterion title. So whatever the number on the spine was for Scream, or
you mean Wes Craven? Scream.
Yes.
That's awesome.
That was on my Criterion.
But second best horror film ever. Alien is my favorite, and then Scream is number 2.
Beware of the Blob, it sneaks and creeps.
Oh,
and
my God,
flies across the floor.
I play that song for my kids all the time too.
It's weird. I was thinking about that song not that long ago. I wasn't expecting you to bring it up in the podcast.
Oh, you just mentioned the Blob, so
yeah, well, and
by
I don't
huh?
know.
By who?
Oh, I don't know who was saying it.
It was Burt Bacharach.
Oh, okay.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Wow,
that's pretty awesome. That is an interesting song. The girls think it's funny.
Funny.
It is.
Because it has this sound in it.
That's right, it does. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, they like the Addams Family one, too, because of the... that they do something...
The snapping?
The snapping, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else, Mike? Or anybody else out want to give their thoughts? Eric, you've seen it.
Yeah, how many of you have seen it?
I have not.
I saw it on TV when I was a kid. I really liked it when I was a kid. I watched it again as an adult and didn't like it quite as much, but was able to appreciate the Clint Eastwood setting.
It was one of the few giant monster films that I never saw.
I have to say, I might have seen it because I did watch a lot of monster movies back then, but when I was younger.
Honestly, and I've tried to keep. I know we had in the past year, somebody had watched a movie they had seen before, but like they just wanted to watch it again because they hadn't seen it in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Would trade the spirit of the episode, but that's okay. So there were films like Incredible Shrinking Man that I kind of really do want to revisit again. To the best of my knowledge, like you, Barrett, I watched a lot of these. I do not believe I ever saw this before. None of this seemed familiar except what I'd seen in like clip shows, you know, things that talk about giant monster movies.
Mm-hmm.
Seen stuff that talked about this movie. I've never seen this movie before, though. Just making that clear.
Gotcha.
I don't understand who violated this, Mike.
I think it was Chrissy.
Ah, okay.
Oh, people out that aren't even here.
What do you mean? Oh, yeah, she did. She. What was it? Yeah, she did a couple of films that I haven't seen for 20 years. I'm like, oh, that's cheating.
That is cheating.
Yeah.
And that's why she's not on the show anymore.
No. Actually, Eric, I know why you've always never were first in this, because Abe, this is the first year Abe hasn't done it.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, I guess we can move on then. All right, so Tarantula, available on Blu-ray, and pretty much you can rent it wherever movies are found. All right, so for me, I had a bunch of films I was looking at. The Innocence was one of them, and it was the one I almost chose. And then the one about the psychopath little girl. Oh, what the hell was that one called?
Bad Seed?
The Bad Seed, yeah. That was another one I had on the list. And then Sid Haig's, one of his first films.
Spider Baby,
that one too. So I had all those. I was saying, all right, I can see any of them. And then I decided, you know what? I'm going to just look for a free film because I either have to go downstairs and watch it on Blu-ray or I'm going to have to pay. And so I did a search and I found a classic that was free on Tubi. So I had a couple of commercials.
Fuck Tubi.
And so one of the big directors of the 70s and 80s, good friends with all the big guys at that time, Brian De Palma film. I'm not really familiar with much of Brian De Palma's work. Obviously, Carrie and Dress to Kill I've seen. That's pretty much about it. So I decided to check out another film that he did that has gained a huge following over the past 40 years now. Ugh, 41 years now. Oh my God, that's so depressing. And that film is Blowout, starring John Travolta and Nancy Allen.
You know, I don't remember much about it.
Really? Yeah. It's an interesting film. It has a damn good cast. John Travolta, Nancy Allen, John Lithgow, and Dennis Franz.
Is that the Hill Street Blues guy?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
sorry, right. I had a little trouble getting that out of my brain.
no worries. Basically, this film is considered a neo-noir mystery thriller. And obviously, both Nancy Allen and John Travolta, De Palma worked with before, so he brought them back and had a good reworking relationship with both, as well as he married Nancy Allen for a few years there, I believe, as well. This film here is basically John Travolta is the lead, and he is a ADR and sound effect person for films, B films. And so the first 5 minutes is really interesting, first 10 minutes, where you think it's going to be a slasher film because it's a slasher. And so you got boobs and knives and blood and all that other stuff. And then you find out that it's just John Travolta and the director watching this film that the director made, and he needs a good scream in the shower when the girl gets stabbed. So
does John Travolta perform the scream?
Yeah, well, they bring in these girls and they all suck. So he's forced to go out and try to change it, even though he's just trying to, you know, he knows what he is. He's a B-movie, ADR. This is not Hollywood, so he doesn't really care. So he goes, yeah, they're fine. But of course, no. So he's stumped. And so he decides to do some other sound effects that he has to throw in later for the film. And just to add to his collection of sound effects that he uses for various B-movies. So he goes out into this park in the middle of nowhere, Philadelphia. I think it's Philadelphia. Yeah, it's Philadelphia. And he's on a bridge, you know, one of those walkway bridges. And he does the sound of an owl and the frogs and a couple lovers, you know, a guy and a girl just walking and talking. And then he does, you know, various other night sounds and the winds and all that. And then he sees an accident where this car goes off the bridge, another bridge, and he runs in and he sees a guy. The guy's dead, but there's a woman in the car, and he saves her. And what he finds out is the person that died is the one of the two major party political candidates for the president, and he's also the governor of Pennsylvania, who's dead. And so there's the big mystery: is the blowout or not, which is, did the tire blow out, or was this an assassination? And did he get the audio, the whole thing?
Hey, wait a minute. I think that's where the title of the movie comes from.
Exactly. So Dennis Franz, the character, was an amateur photographer, and he gets it on film, the whole thing. So Travolta takes this guy's film roll where you know, the guy sells the pictures to some Star magazine or whatever, and they have like 40 pictures of the accident. And he takes those pictures and like makes it like a flip book, and then he puts his audio against it, and he times it perfectly, and he sees a flash in in Dallas. You know, so he sees a gun flash.
That was no accident.
Exactly. So, but the problem is the governor's / presidential candidate wants him to forget it because the girl that was in the car with him
was a whore.
Exactly, which was Nancy Allen's character. So
I just guessed that. I haven't seen the movie.
Exactly. So, as you can guess,
fairness, Eric says that about all the girls.
Oh, a few of them.
That's terrible. So that's all interesting. That whole first hour. Then there's a chase thing at the end that's kind of boring, I felt, and the music is kind of cheesy music, even though it's a decent composer, Pino Donaggio, who's done a lot of De Palma and other people's works. But then they go there, and it's. Meaning go there, meaning the ending is not what you would expect. And because of that, the movie failed at the box office because it wasn't a happy ending, put it that way. So that was cool. And John Lithgow.
Dumb.
John Lithgow plays an awesome villain. He's a bastard.
John Lithgow is sweet.
Yeah, he's awesome in this.
Yeah.
And so Nancy Allen kind of plays it cheesy, like, yeah, you know, like, and chewing gum and all that, but it works, and because, you know, she is, as you screamed out, Eric, the W word, but
1980 whore. Yeah.
But it shows you how good of an actress she is. And it's surprising that she never broke out as, I mean, she was an A-lister for a little bit, but never huge.
She had a steady career.
Because she played the cheerleader in Carrie, and then she played the cop in RoboCop, mm-hmm. and then she plays the prostitute in this film. So she's a really good actress. I think she's an underlooked gem. And Travolta was solid as hell. This was in his prime, when he was just becoming the huge.
This is a movie that Quentin Tarantino
yes.
often cites when, like, talking about when they talk about him digging up old actors or something like that, or giving them a second chance. And he said, you know, people like make fun of John Travolta, but did you see Blowout? You know, he acted his ass off in that movie.
Yeah, and I don't know why people. That's the thing. John Travolta, no matter his personal life and the rumors and all this other crap, and Scientology and all that nonsense, just like Tom Cruise, he's good, and yet everybody hates him because of things that have nothing to do with his acting.
Well, you know? I don't.
Yeah,
I just think it's funny to make fun of him.
Well, he has become a goofball recently. That's
he did create Battlefield Earth. I mean,
arguably
one of the worst movies ever.
Right, but you know what?
That's some bad.
A lot of these guys have passion projects that blow up on them, including Brian De Palma, right?
Big time De Palma, yeah.
And
none of us have like, made the worst movie in the world. We haven't made squat. So
exactly, I just talked about him.
And it's not like Travolta has done something like I don't know, talked about cannibalizing his girlfriend.
Army Hammer.
Right, well, isn't diddling little boys that we know of that puts it in a different category.
No, he seems like he was a great family man. I mean, and unfortunately, he's had some bad. Very terrible things that happened to him with his family when one of his child died in a tragic accident, and then his wife died tragically at a young age. So he hasn't had it easy, even if he is.
No.
And so some of these people are weird, bizarre. I don't give a shit. Do you make a good movie?
Make good movie.
Can you have the ability to look at a script and say, this is a good script, let's make this, and I know how to play this character. Do you pick roles that are good for you? Travolta generally does that well. I don't see a lot of things that he's really been, in my opinion, miscast in.
Right, right. I mean, it doesn't matter.
I always enjoy watching him.
It doesn't matter nowadays. Nowadays, you know, he's like Robert De Niro. He just takes the paycheck. But before... Bruce Willis is another one. So before 2010, pretty much everything. I mean he's solid. He's solid.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's amazing in Pulp Fiction. I mean, he's just amazing.
My God, yeah. He's fantastic in that film. That made him become an A-lister again, as a matter of fact. I think the reason I chose this film was because I knew we just did, me and Barrett and Kevin Letts and Sean Fox did a Halloween Boutique Psychotron reviews for the Kelly Preston film Spellbinder. And so while we were doing that, I remembered Travolta had done this film, and this was a classic and a film that I always wanted to see. So that's the reason why it came to my notice. And then I searched on Just Watch, and I saw that, free on Tubi. So I decided to watch
it. I was going to ask you where you found it. That's good to know. I'll
check. Yeah, so you can watch it free. Yeah. And they have like twice, I think, there was commercials.
It's not free. You pay a price. There's fucking commercials.
But you know what?
They're called good bathroom breaks.
That's exactly right. And you know what's good, and which is what I actually do. I go get a beverage. But the thing about Tubi is they show you the length of the commercials. Tubi. So you know that it's 30 seconds for this one and a total of 120 seconds. So you have plenty of time. You can, you know, so you don't even have to do it. So it's pretty good. It's pretty good. So the film is, I was beginning that. I liked it a lot the first hour, then I was beginning to not like it. I was like, but the ending is like, wow, that was like a sledgehammer.
You have me intrigued. I'm gonna have to check this out.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. I enjoyed it tremendously, and as I said, it has a great cast. And I think everybody here is big fans of Travolta, Allen, and Lithgow. So. Definitely worth checking out.
Probably in the reverse order, but yes.
Travolta, Allen, and Lithgow, Allen, and Travolta. Gotcha. Yep, that makes sense. That's fair. Lithgow. It's kind of interesting, Lithgow's character, too, because I mean, we saw him in Dexter, and he plays a villain there. But, you know, everybody, before I had seen Dexter, and I knew Raising Kane was another one where he plays a crazy, and that's a De Palma film, and as you can see, he brings back the same actor's De Palma. I hadn't seen that. So the only thing I had ever seen Lithgow in before Dexter was where he's a jolly good family guy or a nice guy, you know? So to see him
never
play.
Saw Cliffhanger?
I never saw that either. Yeah.
What about The World According to Garp? Isn't he in that?
I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah. He plays a transsexual, which would get him canceled now because he's not really one.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
He does a great job in that movie.
That's amazing. That guy has not won, got any nominations for Academy Awards, I don't think. But it is. He's a good actor too, because he can play everything from the nice guy to the villain, and he plays a pretty damn good villain in this one. It's a sociopath, so a good one. So if you like me and sociopaths, I love my sociopaths in films. If you like mysteries, thrillers, neo noirs, conspiracies, this is a really good film. Really good film. And The Deep State. It's got The Deep State. So it's kind of prominent for today, day and age as well. Recommend. Any further things that anybody wanted to ask or mention about Blowout? Has anybody else seen the film?
Nope.
No.
I'm intrigued I'm actually intrigued by the sound recording aspect of it. I'm do that myself. Yeah.
It's interesting to do sound recording as a visual medium.
Mike, have you seen it, you said?
Yeah. Pam and I watched it a couple of years ago.
Oh, so you knew it exactly.
And I thought it was a really well-made film. And if I remember correctly, and I'm pretty sure I do, it was a really well-made film that was almost ruined by, I think it was the music.
Yeah, the music. It's too, like, syrupy. It's weird.
The music is just, because this is 80-81.
Yeah.
Right. The music is just feels, which for a movie about sound design, just feels wrong. It just does not feel right. 100%.
It should have been, like, scary music, and they're playing, like, these weird music,
Right, and it's funny, because, you know, George Lucas says, like, music is half of a movie, and Star Wars is like proof of that, kind of. But this movie is almost goes the other way, where this is almost torpedoed by the music.
That's unfortunate,
and it makes no sense to me.
That's why I didn't like the last like half hour in the near the end. It's like, this music's terrible. There's a chase scene. And are people going to die? And they're playing do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do instead of like
that's actually something I noticed when I was watching The Innocents, is that it's a haunted mansion story, right? But there's a lot of the scenes in the movie where they're playing the happy music, because back in the day, the movies were supposed to make you happy. So that's the music they had.
There's a ghost, and cue the Gilligan's Island music.
But you know what? Is that, like, this is the same time as Halloween and Raiders of the Lost Ark and stuff like that. So Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, that had exciting, adventurous music correctly in the film. And Halloween.
John Williams write the music for Blowout?
No.
There's your problem.
Yeah, it wasn't Jerry Goldsmith or anybody. It was a guy that has worked with De Palma in pretty much every film of his. Pino DiNaggio, Brian De Palma director. DiNaggio is known for his collaborations with director Brian De Palma and his work in European and American genre films.
Did he do Carrie? Because that movie's got some cheesy effing music in it too.
He probably did, actually. Yeah. Let me see.
Carrie.
Yeah, sure did. Yep, he sure did. Yep,
that all makes sense.
Yep. He did Piranha too. Joe Dante's Piranha.
I can only blame the music so much on the composer, because
the howling. He did the howling.
The director had to say, "Yeah,
approve."
That's it. That's what I wanted.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. He did the howling, and the howling. Right. Is great music in that, and it worked perfectly with that film. So you're right; it has to be the director that told him, "This is what I want."
Most likely, the director says, with very few exceptions, the directors don't just say, "Go off and make what you want." The director had probably said, "All right, now right here, where they're being stalked, and there's this awesome chase scene to build up to the climax of the movie, I want you to like write something like do 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 do. That's what I'm looking for." Okay.
Well, and that's the funny thing is that. Eric mentioned Carrie's music. I mentioned, and Mike, you mentioned this Blowout's music. And then he also did De Palma's Body Double. And that one had the same type of weird music as well. So you notice, and this is a De Palma thing, I think, more than this guy. It's more De Palma. De Palma just likes, doesn't know how
but to. But I think the music is perfectly appropriate in Carrie. I mean, Carrie has those prom moments and those happy moments of being.
Yeah, he had some pretty awesome.
So,
yeah.
And so that makes sense for that. That's not, we're being chased by a conspiracy that murders people.
That's true. That's true.
More the synth music that goes along with the montages in that movie, like the detention montage and the prom montage.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Yeah. But another aspect of this film that's interesting is Vilmos Zsigmond did the cinematography. Vilmos Zsigmond is one of the greats of all time. He did Close Encounters. He did Deliverance. He did The Deer Hunter. He did Robert Altman films. He did Woody Allen films. So this guy's
Deer Hunter is a dark fucking movie.
Yeah.
The best line of that film, I loved it, was when Christopher Walken is in the hospital in Nam, and they start talking to him, and you know he's all PTSD, and he won't speak. And then they said his name, and it was like this wicked long Russian name. So it was like, you know, I'll just say his name was John Christopher Vostrovich. Are you Russian? And he looked at, is that a Russian name? And he looks at the doctor, and he finally speaks, and he goes, no, it's American. I was like, yes! The fucking best line ever. I loved it. Because Russians are people, too, especially American Russians.
What the fuck? Is this Phil?
What do you mean?
You normally start swearing about commie bastards when Russia comes up.
No, Russians in America, they're not commies. They're Americans. But yeah, that was an awesome movie. Yeah, the real depression. And it was took place in Pittsburgh.
So Blowout, you liked it?
Oh, yeah, Blowout was pretty awesome. Well, we're doing a 6 Degrees and the breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
So anyway, so it was real good. High recommend.
Cool.
And you can get it for $20.02. The Blu-ray by Criterion. Believe it or not, that's what it says. $20.02.
Huh. All right.
Well, I don't know why 1999. I mean, I do, but like those are like the standards, but. Boy, that is a weird fucking price. $20.
That is.
It really is.
Yeah, it is weird. Yeah,
that was palindrome. Clearance at Walmart.
Palindrome. 3 cents cheaper, we'd go, that's fine.
But you know what's funny is when, again, now they're Euro, but at the time they were francs. I think it was francs. In France, when I was in France, they didn't do that. They had flat prices. So $17 or whatever, 17 francs. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't do pennies. They didn't do percentages. But like the U.S., that. They always did. It's $16.99. It's like, ooh, I'm getting it for $16.
You're getting fooled.
Yeah. You're getting fooled. Yeah. So, but in Paris, they did not do that. So that was kind of cool. All right. So I guess we can move on to the next film here. And we got Barrett. So, Barrett, what do you got? What do you got?
So I'm a pretty big fan of David Cronenberg. And there's some of his movies I have not seen, so I decided to watch the 1977 Rabid.
Nope.
What?
I just made a noise.
Oh, okay. There is a remake of this movie that was done in 2019. I have not seen that one.
I have.
Have you? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I watched this movie. It's
written. Yeah, Scream Factory Blu-ray, as a matter of fact.
It's on HBO Max right now.
Oh, that's good.
Cool.
And it's written and directed by David Cronenberg. It's an interesting movie. It's definitely 70s. You can feel the 70s when you watch this movie. They definitely have a distinctive feel to them.
Can you feel the 70s tonight?
It stars Marilyn Chambers, who had fame before that as a porn actress.
Mm-hmm.
I think the proper term is adult film actress.
Whatever you want to call it.
He got it right.
No, he believes that the correct term is a porn actress.
Eric, what did you call Nancy Allen's character again?
Well, that's different.
All right, fair enough. Anyway, continue.
And then it plays, or it stars a guy named Frank Moore and another guy named Joe Silver. There are a fair number of other actors that have smaller roles in the movie.
A lot of Canadians, I think.
Yeah, I would put this film in the body horror slash zombie category.
Mm-hmm.
It actually had more zombies than I expected. I did not expect it to be a zombie flick, honestly. And
especially not in 76.
77. Yeah, but
77.
Either way.
No, if this had been like 2008, then sure, they all had zombies.
Right. So
Marilyn Chambers, a New Englander. Anyway,
So this movie takes place kind of in the countryside of Montreal and ends up in Montreal at the end. And it starts out with a couple out riding on a motorcycle with that classic 70s music that they're having a happy day. And they get into a car accident and their motorcycle gets driven off the road and they crash. She's in pretty bad shape and the guy is hurt somewhat. He might have a concussion. And the closest place for them to go is a plastic surgeon's hospital. So they go out. The plastic surgeon gets a message saying there's an accident. There's flames in the sky. So they go out there and grab the two of them. And she's hurt really badly, but I guess the work that he has to do the most is a skin graft. I don't know why, but she's hurt really badly, and that's all he's got to do is this skin graft. And the skin graft turns into some weird thing that starts poking out of her body, and she attacks people for blood now, and that's the only way she can feed.
It's in her armpit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of in her. The way they showed
the
it.
The weirdest thing about the whole movie.
Yeah, it's like in her underarm, near her armpit, and so she wraps herself around people to eat them. But anyone she eats turns into a zombie. And
Barrett, if I'm not mistaken, she uses her sexuality a lot to convince people. Am I right?
Yeah, I think the part is definitely made for her because she kind of flirts with the guys and the guys get close. She acts like, you know, someone that needs help. But men are not the only ones she attacks. She does attack women, too.
Sure.
The women just aren't quite as stupid in getting close to her. She just finds them in positions where they're able to be caught quickly. She kills or she attacks and turns into zombies a fair amount of people until she finally hitchhikes and gets onto a truck, infects that guy. She gets to Montreal and this plague starts spreading everywhere. And it's kind of interesting because they start talking about vaccine cards. And I was just thinking about current times. It just kind of struck me funny. In the end, she doesn't believe she's doing this, and her boyfriend finally finds her, and he's trying to convince her to go and get help, and she knocks him out, and she takes some other guy and she feeds on him, and she locks herself in a room with this guy to see if her boyfriend's right that she's doing it, and in the end, she gets killed. So she is wrong. She is the one that's transferring this all around to everybody. It was pretty good movie. I enjoyed it. For a 70s horror movie, it was better than I expected. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. Have any of you guys seen the 1977 one?
The only one I've seen. I saw it when I bought the Blu-ray from Scream Factory and came in. Right now you can get it for $19.99. It's the collector's edition, so it's like loaded with extras. I watched it, and I was pleasantly surprised as well. I thought it was a really good film.
It's not mired in the past, so that kind of was nice. It could have happened in today's time, and it would have been just as well done to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you know, Marilyn Chambers was really good as the lead. The film... Well, it was a really solid zombie film, and again, I was like you. I was not expecting a zombie film, and it was a zombie film before zombie films became hip. You know, it was before Dawn of the Dead, it was pretty solid, and it was like fast zombies too.
Yeah, well, and you could tell that it was a little bit low budget because whenever they showed the thing in her arm, they did these huge close-ups of it. You never saw it when it was like on her, really. So that I thought was pretty interesting. But it was
so yeah, a good movie for people with an armpit fetish.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you know, David Cronenberg is the king of body horror for a reason. Yeah, I've seen both the original and the remake. I intentionally made sure I saw the original before I watched the remake. And both are fine. You know, I don't regret watching them, but not on a list of favorites either for me personally.
Yeah, I don't put it as David Cronenberg's best for sure.
Yeah.
It is
History of Violence
for the time period that it did it in.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of his first films, along with Shivers, that brought him into, I guess, you know, his training films, you know, Shiver and Rabid. And they both got really big cult followings for a reason. I completely agree that it deserved the collector's edition that Screen Factory released.
I might get it now that I know that.
Yeah. I would highly recommend folks to do that if you're interested in the film. And, you know, it has all the stuff that midnight drive-in films have back in the days, you know. So,
like porn stars.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what's interesting about that is they wanted to cast Sissy Spacek in that role. But they
– No shit.
They did not like her Texas accent.
Huh.
And so – Ivan Reitman suggested Marilyn Chambers, and that's how she got on the film.
Right. Yeah, because she had already done work with Wes Craven and Sean Cunningham before, in like Craven's and Cunningham's, I guess, exploitation films before they became famous. And so they knew her. And so she had been known as a real actress for a while, and then she just happened to fall into adult films due to, I guess, being horny and money. And so,
she
yeah.
just happened to fall into adult films. Like, she's like, oh, I'm sorry. This Oops. Is a porno? I didn't realize.
Oops. I didn't know.
Yeah. That was metaphorical.
Yeah, whatever reason a person would make that decision, you know, that's, I guess, their decision.
How did my monologue get cut from the script?
A monologue?
It's a joke, Phil. There are no monologues in pornos.
Oh, I thought you were talking about. I was talking about Rabbit. I was like, yeah, I'm kind of familiar with the film, and I don't remember ever reading anything about having a monologue in it. But anyway, yeah. So it is. That's the thing about this film, Rabbit and Shivers, was both of them were not available for a long time to DVD and me and VOD audiences, and then out of the blue, both of them suddenly popped up on Blu-ray. One, the Shivers came from Lionsgate, their B movie releases. I forget what that company's called. The one that did the one about the robots in the mall. What's that one called?
Remember that?
Chopping Mall. The company that released Chopping
Best
Mall.
Run.
What is it? Yeah, Vestron. Yeah. So Vestron released Shivers, which is owned by Lionsgate. And then this one here was released by Scream Factory as a collector's edition. So basically the quote-unquote ultimate edition. Mike, have you seen this one since you like zombie films?
I haven't seen it. I actually just picked Shivers up on Black Friday or Black Friday weekend. Or Black Friday month or whatever it is, because the Vestron, they had it, I think it was like $10, the Vestron video version.
Yeah.
But Rabbit is one of the holes in my David Cronenberg library. So it's one I do want to pick up at some point. It's one I do want to watch. I just haven't gotten around to doing it yet. That was a cat in the bag, if anyone's wondering.
So you bought Shivers, but did you buy Rabbit?
I didn't buy Rabbit yet. I don't think I did. Pretty sure I didn't. Because I was just looking it up because I was trying to remember which one I bought, whether on Amazon, whether it was Shivers or Rabbit. And I looked up Rabbit first and didn't have the thing that says you just purchased this schmuck. So I'm pretty sure I didn't buy it.
Gotcha. Yeah, the Rabbit I bought I pre-ordered that one, and Shivers I did too. I pre-ordered that one because they're Cronenbergs, and I had to see them. And they were always on my list. I got to watch them because I hear so much crazy shit about them. I haven't watched Shivers yet, though. Have you watched Shivers yet, Mike?
I did a number of years ago, and I want to rewatch it.
Right. Yeah, now on
I have seen Remastered. That.
You have seen that one, Barrett?
Yeah, I've seen Shivers.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I think I like Rabbit better, but they're both interesting.
Gotcha. Now, I know the remake was by the Soska sisters. Is that right, Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because they wanted to do a Canadian director classic. And so that's why they did it.
Only an authentic Canadian could do a movie about armpit vampires.
Indeed. And I know it didn't get good reviews and people were kind of...
I didn't mind it.
Yeah.
Well, it had two things going against it. One is that it was a remake, and two, it was by the Soska sisters, who had, I think, pissed some people off by that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, right. What'd they do?
Let's not get into it.
Yeah.
Moving on.
I'll tell you tomorrow.
You can look it up.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, I'll look it up.
Yeah. It was, I don't know. Anyway,
moving on.
It wasn't Army Hammer. We'll say that much.
Yeah. It wasn't that big of a deal. Yeah. But also it could be some false backlash too for nothing too, but it's not for us to discuss. I think that was a good choice. Anybody else want to say anything about Rabbit?
I'll just say, really, if you like body horror, the first and last place you need to go is the Cronenberg collection.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
The guy wrote the book, right? Mm-hmm. Now this new chick, the French director, who did Raw and what is it, Titan, whatever. Titan,
holy shit! Have any of you seen that?
I have.
No, never. It's on my to watch list.
Oh my god!
I do.
She sounds like she's coming for the king. But if body horror is your kit thing, then yeah, Cronenberg.
Right. Yeah.
His son's doing similar stuff too.
Yeah, so his son's last film got really good reviews, but I didn't see that one yet. That almost was a
Possessor.
Yeah. Is that the second one?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, a lot of people like that.
Really good.
Also, we should have done an episode on that one. We never did. I don't know why. Oh, but maybe it was. I don't know why we didn't. But either way. Oddly, my favorite Cronenberg films, not that I've seen a lot of them, to be honest, but my favorite two are A History of Violence and The Dead Zone. Those are my two favorite. And neither of them are body horror. How about that?
That's true.
Yeah.
I got to put The Fly.
And honestly, they're the...
Oh, The Fly's awesome, too. Yeah.
Least Cronenberg films I could think of. Like, if you would... I mean, if you just showed me...
This is like his last two, right?
Hmm?
His last two are the least Cronenbergish, don't you think?
I haven't seen the last two. I don't think that he's done.
Yeah, the one about Freud and Einstein or whatever, and then the other one was the one where there's a bodyguard type thing. But you're right.
Of his big films, certainly of like Cronenberg. I can understand he's older. He wants to try something different, so I can understand doing Freud and whatever. But the idea of him in the '80s. Like, just go, you're going to do a Stephen King film. Which one are you going to do about? We're going to do Dead Zone. I'm like, it's just.
And yet, you know what? It may be heresy to some people, but I think it's the best Stephen King film out there. Dead Zone.
It's actually one of the better adaptations. I'll
give you that. It's one of the better adaptations. It's one of the more highly regarded films. I'm not denying it's a really good film. I'm just saying.
You're right.
If you went to someone and you said, do you want to watch an 80s Cronenberg Stephen King film? I don't think anybody would think that it would be Dead Zone. which is sort of a fairly, I don't know how cerebral, but for a Stephen King 80s horror film, cerebral political thriller.
Well, I now understand why I like that film so much. It's because of the sociopath. Again, Martin Sheen was so fucking awesome in that film.
He was.
That was. I mean, not Christopher Walken. He was fucking great too. But Martin, I love my sociopaths in films. I just, they're just something about him. And he, Martin Sheen was so awesome in that film. So I like that one. The one I haven't seen that I do want to see by Cronenberg is Dead Ringers. I hear so much good things about that one.
I work with somebody who apparently at one point with a group of friends, it was his turn to choose the movie they were going to go see, and he chose that one. And for some reason, once they went into the theater, he snuck out and went to a different movie, and they all watched Dead Ringers and hated it and have never forgiven him to this day for choosing that movie and then sneaking out.
And yet I hear so maybe it's because it's just weird and they weren't expecting it, because I hear so much good things about it. Yeah,
well, he isn't for me, so it wouldn't surprise me.
Well, first of all, the story is totally incomplete until we know what the other movie was.
I don't know.
Like, was it Young Einstein with Yahoo Serious?
No, I asked him. He didn't remember.
Chairman of the Board with Carrot Top.
Or what's the one with Pauly Shore and that plays a caveman or something?
Yeah, I mean, these are things. Knowing what the other film was when he dragged them to the movie about the evil gynecologists,
yeah,
and then snuck off to, like, you know, was it like Little Mermaid? Like, what did he do? I remember seeing Dead Ringers when I was in college. I rented it on VHS. I remember reading an article about it, and I think it was Cinema Fantastica, whatever the name of that magazine was. And I think a lot of it may have been a bit beyond me at the time. I thought it was interesting, but I think there was stuff I didn't get, and it's one I've kind of wanted to revisit. But, you know, we didn't do the revisit list thing as right. A recurring feature. We did the bucket list, never seen before. Anyway.
Interesting. So Dead Ringers, $17.99. The collector's edition from Scream Factory. So maybe worth checking out.
Does it come with a little replica of the speculum?
What is wrong with you?
Yeah.
What the heck is it? What is a speculum?
It's the device the gynecologist used to open a woman's vagina to examine it.
Oh, so that has something to do with the film, I guess. Okay. Interesting.
Well, the movie is about twin brothers who are gynecologists.
Gotcha. And so that English actor director plays two roles?
I guess.
Yeah,
the guy that did
unless
Thor.
He has a
the
twin.
The guy that directed Thor. Isn't he the star?
No, I don't think it's Kenneth Branagh.
Oh, it's not Branagh. It's the other English guy. The guy that was.
You think I heard with a very
Winston Churchill?
No. He's the guy that was that won the Academy Award for that Newport, Rhode Island guy that supposedly.
Tom Holland.
What?
I just don't talk names of British actors out. Henry Cavill.
Iron.
So, Barry, did you have anything else to say about Rabbit?
Jeremy Irons.
It's Jeremy Irons, yes. Yeah. No, I do not have anything else to say about Rabbit except for it's worth watching. If you like zombies, it's worth watching. I didn't expect that. And if you like body horror, it's worth watching. And it's a pretty good Cronenberg film, although not in his top films. I'd say it's up there a little bit.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so Dead Ring is Jeremy Irons. He plays the twin brothers, yep. I guess. Gotcha. For some reason, I compared him. I thought it was the other guy, Branagh. All right, so that's pretty much our four films. If we go over those four films again, the first one was The Innocents from 1961. That was Eric's bucket list. And then for Mike, it was Tarantula from...
No. It was Tarantula!
Right. And what year was that one?
1954,
was it?
55, 56?
Yeah, something like that.
55, I think.
All right. And then for me, it was Brian De Palma's Blowout from 1981. And then for Barrett, it was Rabid, David Cronenberg's film from 1977, starring Marilyn Chambers. And all four of those films are very different and all worthy choices. They are all considered at least cult classics, at the very least.
Well, it's weird.
Yes.
That actually, that Blowout is kind of looked on fondly now, but was a failure then. Tarantula was successful for what it was.
Yeah.
Rabid was a cult classic from the beginning.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, and The Innocents was.
The Innocents
one of those.
Is considered a classic.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Blowout was a complete failure because of its ending, is what they say. Because everybody,
I want to watch it now.
Yeah, everybody walked out saying that's horrible. What, the ending, but it actually was pretty. It was like, wow, crazy. But yeah, I may watch Tarantula now and The Innocents, because I haven't seen those two yet. And I may watch Rabbit again, too. I wouldn't mind checking that out again. That was a pretty good film, especially on the Blu-ray. It's really good quality and such. All right, so that's pretty much it for this episode here. So for folks who are curious, this one will probably come out pretty quick, so next week. Our best of or wrap-up of 2021 episode, because I know a lot of folks are very interested in that episode, will be coming out at the end of January. Now, are we doing a episode of what we are waiting for? Or what we're...
Why would we do that? It's a waste of time.
I think this is another year where we might want to hold off on that.
All right, let's hold off. We're going to skip that because of the COVID again, because everything keeps on getting pushed back. Yeah, especially, I mean, we got hit by COVID this week. So... we'll skip that episode, but for all those who are looking for the best of 2021 wrap-up, that should be coming out at the very end of January. So look out for that as well. That's usually one of our top episodes of the year.
It's coming. We just had to wait for Mike to not be blind anymore to watch a few more movies.
Yay!
Indeed. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. So before we... we do have some time. Anybody wanted to mention what we've been watching or anything like that? Eric, you got anything that you wanted to discuss?
Oh, yes. I've actually watched quite a few titles in preparation for the end of the year list. Let's see here. I watched the Netflix movie Don't Look Up. It's got an amazing cast. Leonardo DiCaprio, Meryl Streep, Kate Blanchett, Jennifer, Lawrence, that's her last name, Jennifer Lawrence. So it's got a bunch of famous people in it, and they're fine. Mike would hate this movie.
Meryl Streep, right?
Yeah, it's
Phil would hate it, too.
It's very heavy-handed.
There's a reason I have not watched it.
Yeah. It made me laugh, but it is very heavy-handed.
I didn't mind it. I actually found it pretty amusing.
Meryl Streep was awesome in it, I thought.
But, Meryl Streep was pretty good. Yeah, yeah.
I heard her character.
I took it more of a comedy than anything else, but people are getting all uptight about it.
It's supposed to be a satire, and I know what it's a satire of. I know what it's trying to say, and just what I hear about it, and I hear the premise of it, I just roll my eyes.
I'm telling you this right now.
I just roll my eyes because I didn't mind it.
I thought it was a good time. I don't understand what the fuss is about. It's a disposable Netflix movie.
All right, and I have a feeling I'm going to watch it later after the hype has died down, and my expectations are about as low as they could possibly be. Because I like a lot of the cast, and I like a lot of Adam McKay's films, so I'll probably be on a better wavelength to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, the two leads are
fine things to enjoy.
The two leads are awesome. I mean, DiCaprio is like one of my favorite actors, and Jennifer Lawrence is, I think, my third favorite actress in the modern era. So, that has gotten my attention.
So, I mean, it's there if you want to watch it. I'm not necessarily recommending it. It's not going to be for everybody. I also watched The Matrix Resurrections. Easier for me to say. And I thought it was okay. A lot of people are either going love or hate on this. I'll just say, without giving any spoilers away, that I would have preferred for the movie to keep going the way it began, rather than trying to reconnect with the original franchise. But that's not what they had in mind when they made it. So,
it was just
hitting the nostalgia button a little much for my personal taste. So there's nothing wrong with the movie. It's entertaining, but it's for me.
I got to see that on my last day of Christmas break when I got my eyesight back. I think it's a self-hating film.
a little bit.
But because they tell you up front why the movie was made.
Yes.
It was made because Warner Brothers told them to make the movie, or they're going to get somebody else to make it.
And that probably was the smart thing to do, is based off what I heard. But
well, no,
I need to get through my list of movies here, guys. Yeah. So I don't want to dive too deep. But some people are going to love The Matrix. Some people are going to hate it. I was right there in the middle. I liked it. I watched the 1980 movie Terror Train for the first time.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's Jamie Lee Curtis, right?
It is Jamie Lee Curtis. And Jamie Lee Curtis is the only reason anybody would ever be interested in watching that movie, because it's not good. Oh. David Copperfield is also in that movie.
Yep.
Oddly enough. It's a throwaway slasher. There's nothing particularly remarkable about it other than the presence of Jamie Lee Curtis. Then I watched on Shudder a movie called The Columnist, which is about a newspaper columnist who doesn't like that people are saying mean things about her on social media, so she hunts them down and murders them.
Oh, I heard that's pretty cool.
I enjoyed it. It was okay. I gave it 3.5 out of 5 stars on Letterboxd. Then I watched, I watched 3 Shudder movies in a row. The next one is a Thai movie called The Medium, which I really highly recommend.
I heard that's really good. A lot of people are in their top 10, top 20 are here.
Yeah, it's, I really liked it. It's a fake documentary. They go to, document the life of this shaman, and while they're there, some stuff starts to happen and they decide to look into it, and it's a longer movie, but stick with it because the last act goes bananas and it's pretty awesome.
Is it worth an episode, Eric?
I'd do it.
Just as a reminder, if you're a documentary filmmaker, don't go trying to film spooky shit, because this always happens.
Watch. I'm going to have to watch that one. Yeah, I keep on forgetting about it.
And then I watched another Shudder title called Sun. That's S-O-N. Which is fine. I enjoyed it. I'm not going to say too much about it, because in the blurb and the poster and everything for this movie, they kind of deliberately obscure what the movie's actually about. So I'm not going to give it away talking about it here. But it's worth a watch.
Now, a question for you about The Medium. Is that a Thai film, you said?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. And that's on Shudder for free. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Well, okay, continue. I'm sorry. Shudder.
Indeed.
Then I watched The Innocents. Then I watched another Shudder title, The Boy Behind the Door, which was okay.
It sounds like one of those pornos we were talking about before.
No, it's actually about 2 kids who get kidnapped. I'm not really spoiling anything by saying that, because it happens in the first scene. But basically it's about them trying to get away. And I mean, this would have bugged me. The only reason I didn't hate this movie is because it was two kids. They do some stupid shit, but they're kids, so I can live with it. Because like a lot of these type of movies where somebody's trying to get out of somewhere, get away from something, I'm just like, you fucking idiot. Why don't you just do the thing? But these are kids, so it was a little easier to palate. So yeah, The Boy Behind the Door. Yeah, it's a mediocre film in my opinion. And then I watched, I don't know how to classify this movie. It's fiction, maybe sci-fi. It's called 9 Days. It stars Winston Duke, who was the dad in Us. And he plays a man whose job it is to interview batches of souls in the time span of 9 days and pick one of them to be born. It's really kind of a fascinating premise. This is a slower drama, so it's probably not for everybody. But if that sounds like an intriguing premise to you, you might want to check it out. And I just rented that VOD. And then I watched another movie called Mass, which is also a drama. It is basically four people in a room talking. So if that's not your kind of movie, skip it. But it's basically the parents of a child who was killed on a school shooting talking to the parents of the child that did the shooting and then shot himself, trying to get some answers. It is very wrought. It is very dramatic.
Eric, what's wrought mean? I've heard that word many times.
It's very emotional. Yeah. There's a lot of yelling and crying going on. So it's dark stuff. And you won't end the movie in a good mood. But it sounds like your kind of thing. If you enjoy watching people act, this is a good movie for it because the cast is phenomenal. But this isn't going to be everybody's kind of movie. So that's what I've been watching.
How do you spell rot?
WROUGHT.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, it's a word I always see written, but I never. Yeah, gotcha. All right, very
it's
good.
It's not one I use on a regular basis. I'm kind of surprised it came out of my mouth.
Right, right.
But, Eric? You know. Eric, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I suspect I know your answer to this question because of what you said about don't look up, but I do want to ask. This seems like as a topic to be a minefield to make a movie about.
It could be triggering for some people. I mean, it's they're talking about school shooting the whole time. So,
well, I'm not so much talking about the triggering as I am talking about the finger wagging. So is it
I see what you're saying.
Right. So
I mean, just saying we kind of have to touch on it, given the conversation that's happening. But there's no
feel like they're scolding the viewing audience and telling them how they should feel about it, or does it feel like an actual conversation between real people with real views?
No, it feels like a real conversation, because they do go around in circles on some stuff, and you know, like the whole gun control topic is broached briefly, and then one of them says, "That's not what we're here to talk about," and the other guy's like, "Yeah, you're right." So they move on from that. And it's kind of – I enjoyed the opposing points of view on the whole thing. Like the people whose child was shot feel like they're pretty righteous. And then the parents of the kid who did the shooting are kind of used to people hating them, so they're not really taken aback by it. But at the same time are able to express the fact that they also lost their child. So yeah, it's a bunch of really good acting, and that's the reason to watch the movie. I don't think it leans on any particular side of any argument. It presents a bunch of them, but doesn't it? Is it's not like shaking his finger at you saying, we need gun control or anything like that. That's not what the movie is.
Gotcha. And it's another.
That's it.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah, for me, I've just been playing video games. Resident Evil Village, I replayed that again with my two girls, and they loved that game. So we did that, and the game still holds up the second time playing.
All these years later.
Yeah, well, no, Resident Evil Village is brand new.
Right.
It is listed as one of the top 10 games of 2021 by most outlets, and rightfully so. It's an absolutely fantastic game. And then I bought, after we watched Raccoon City, I bought Dead, Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3 in a package, the remasters. And so I've been doing Resident Evil 2, and man, is this a long game. And I forgot how stressful it is to conserve weapons and health.
Yep.
And all that. They did get rid of, like you said, Mike, they did get rid of the micro, the typewriter tape, because back in the original version of the game, you only had so many saves. So fortunately here, they actually even say you can save as much as you want, which is thank God, because otherwise, yeah, that would make it even more stressful.
Right, because that's always the cheat, right, in games, especially I remember in old games, like you would just save constantly when
Doom. That's what I used to do.
You could just save back in the day before you could save wherever you wanted to. Just like in console games. So on PC games, you just keep saying save, save, save. And then you get to the hard part of the game and you could inch your way through by like Groundhog Day-ing it, right? You know, die and come back and try something else. And with Resident Evil, it'd be like, oh, I've got 5 bullets. Run. Bang, I missed. Reload. And you could just keep burning through your saves. So the original game, to stop that from happening, to add to the tension and dread, would give you a very limited number of saves. Saves were a collectible item.
Because
you better make sure you use that bullet right.
Yeah, because a couple of times I've done what I sometimes do in video games with this new Resident Evil 2, where you can save unlimited, even though you can't save at you only can save at specific spots, but at least it's unlimited. I run ahead just expecting to die. And then when I do die, I go back and I say, okay, now I know how to go through some of it without worrying. It's good. It's good. Resident Evil is good. Resident Evil 2 is good. So I'll play Resident Evil 3 too after I play Resident Evil 2. But I still have to do Kennedy, Leon, because I'm doing Claire right now, Claire Redfield.
So does the movie make more sense now, and do you appreciate its deep hidden layers?
It makes me like the movie less, because it's not like the game. They try to, but they change too much, and the cast is terrible compared to the characters in the movie. I mean, in the game. So it makes me like it less. There's also extras too, so I can play as 3 other people, like the mayor's daughter, and then 2 other things. So I'll play all those too, and then I'll probably move on to Resident Evil 3 after that. I'm still thinking, out of the 2 franchises, not including Resident Evil Village, because Resident Evil Village is unbelievable, I still think I like Silent Hill better. I love the first three Silent Hills, and then the last 2. The only one that I was disappointed with was The Room, because that one, you just always ran out of everything, and then if you saved, you're doomed. So,
I've never played any of those games, but I like the Silent Hill movie. I thought it was one of the better video game adaptations.
Yeah, if you like those movies, you would love the games. You can get them cheap now too, even the remastered versions of 2 and 3. But I remember the first day I played 1, and I was like, this game is unfucking believable. It was such a great game, and then 2 and 3 were awesome too. So I recommend those games too. Yeah. So that's all I've been doing. Resident Evil Village. Speaking of Resident Evil Village, let's move on to you, Barrett. I know you just purchased that and you were playing for a little bit.
I've only played it a little bit. I've had these last 2 weeks have been kind of rough for me, so I haven't really been focused on anything at all. When I have had time, I've just kind of been, I don't know, doing nothing. So I really don't have anything to report. I did get through like a little cabin in the game in the beginning. I liked the environment and it was definitely creepy, but I haven't gotten to anywhere where I would fight anything yet.
Oh, you're going to have a nice thrill in coming up, because after that cabin, you come to the village and you see Lady Dimitrescu's castle in the distance and everything. And then you enter the village and then something nuts happens, dude.
And then he's going to spoil everything.
No,
I get so involved in looking for things to make sure I don't miss anything that
you don't
spend hours and hours looking for things.
There's one thing about Resident Evil, all the Resident Evil games that people forget, is when you look at the map, if it's red, that means there's still something you missed in that room or building. Yeah. If it's blue, that means you got everything and you don't have to look anymore.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah. So you won't be doing that. I think they did that intentionally so you don't waste like 5 hours in one room saying, where is it? There's got to be something.
Because it's so dark, you can't tell necessarily if you found anything.
And also, there's so many things that are just there for the environment that you can't pick up or do stuff with. So, but you don't know that. So you say, that has to be something. But unfortunately,
clicking on it.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't work. So now that's the one thing. So just open your map. And if it's blue, that means you got everything and you can move on. So,
good. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
But yeah, I haven't really been able to focus on anything. It's been a hard last couple weeks. So
fair enough.
Hopefully I'm back to normal coming up.
Fair enough. Mike, what about yourself? Anything?
Yeah, I have squeezed some things in because before and after, I was blind, I was able to squeeze some things in. It was just the time that I had the time to see a lot of stuff, blind. So I did see Spider-Man Far From Home. No, not Far From Home. That's the one that came out 2 years ago. No Way Home, which I liked a lot. If you're a Marvel nerd, if you're a Spider-Man nerd, if you are a Spider-Man nerd or a superhero fan, you probably know all the big spoilers and in the film, but I just on the off chance that you have not had any of it spoiled for you, I would recommend going to see it in theaters with the crowd because there's some nice moments in it. And I did like it a lot. I think it worked well. And it might actually be the best of the however many Spider-Man films that they've done now. The best of the live action Into the Spider-Verse, the animated one, is still by far the best. So I did get to see that. I did get to see The Kingsman, which is the prequel to the Kingsman series, which has two entries.
Worth it or not?
I liked
the first two. So
I liked it a lot more than I expected, and I'm not trying to qualify that. I liked it a lot, and I wasn't sure I was going to because I loved the first film. I was lukewarm on the second film.
Does it have a different actor in this one?
Well, it's a prequel. It's set in World War I, so it's not like prequel. It's a 80 years ago prequel, or actually 100 years ago prequel. And it's got Ralph Fiennes is the lead, and it's just. You remember the Naked Gun movies?
We all do. Yeah.
And in the movie The Naked Gun, the first scene. You have a shot where like you have like all the America's enemies sitting around a table, right, conspiring to destroy America.
Or the West, anyway.
Or the West. Well, that's basically the scene, how it starts with the Kingsman, except it's set in 1917, where you have a shadowy Dr. Evil kind of villain, and all the various villains of 1917 or the world at the time are basically his henchmen. The one that's featured the most in the ads is being Rasputin. And there is a great fight scene with Rasputin in the middle of the movie. Now I'm sure somebody like Phil will probably nitpick the historical accuracy of the film to death. because it does go into.
He doesn't understand what entertainment is.
I don't think that historical accuracy is what these movies are about anyway. So
what surprises me is that for a film that's in the Kingsman franchise, the Kingsman is actually a kind of sober film. It is not as like over the top and like bawdy and gory as the first two films are, which is really interesting, and it does have some very like emotional kind of beats to it. Because the whole idea of the story is that it's the Ralph Fiennes' wife is killed, and he's trying to protect his son, and he will not let his son go off to fight in World War I. And that's a conflict between them, and it will eventually lead into the Kingsman franchise. So it's played surprisingly straight. It's still fun. The action scenes are really good, I thought, but there's only like really three action set pieces, or four, because there's one at the beginning of the film, like in the prologue. And one of which is that big fight with Rasputin. There's one in between the trenches in World War I that is really well done and well filmed, because you have these two sides in the middle of the night, these two groups of soldiers between the two trenches, and they're afraid to open fire with each other, because as soon as there's gunshots, they know the Germans on one side and the British on the other are going to open fire at whatever's in the middle, and so they get up close and personal to settle the conflict. And then there's, of course, the climactic battle with the main villain at the end of the film. So I was really surprised how much I liked the movie. It is fun, but it is way toned down from the first two films. That is not a criticism. In fact, for some people that might be a selling point. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. I don't know if I liked it as much as the first film, but I definitely liked it better than the second. And I did see The Matrix Resurrection. And like I said, it's sort of a self-hating film because it's a movie that was clearly made reluctantly. I do think it's a clever film. That isn't necessarily saying it's a good film. Your mileage is going to vary. I am very ambivalent. I have not decided if I enjoyed the movie or not, because I did find it clever in the way it was done. And basically, it's a criticism of its own existence and a criticism of mining nostalgia for making movies.
But it's also doing that.
Right. So it's just sort of like how South Park. Right. Well, that's why I'd say it's a self-hating
meta.
Film.
Right.
And it's sort of like how South Park made a movie that was gross and vulgar and sexual, that criticized parents for letting their kids go see animated movies that were gross and vulgar and sexual.
Mm-hmm.
And they were having their cake and eating it too. Except that was the movie they wanted to make. And I think in this case, Lana Wachowski, this is not the movie she wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
It was the movie she was made to make. And so she basically said, fuck you, here's your movie. That's the sense I get. Maybe she really wanted to make this.
I'm right there with you. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm there with you.
But I don't know that it makes it an enjoyable experience. I know some people said they felt like they were being made fun of because they're being fans of the first film, which I don't think it is. It's making fun of the Hollywood system.
Mm-hmm.
For constantly recycling old ideas and not doing anything new and insisting, like they call out the idea that we need a new bullet time in this movie, which they do sort of give you something that, no, it's not as good as bullet time at the end, but it is literally a criticism of reliving the past. Mm-hmm. is the new mechanism, the cool feature that they put in this film is a fuck you, living in the past is not a good thing. So it's just
it
a
is
really
not.
Weird
thing. It is not.
It is a really, really weird thing. But again, being clever, being good and entertaining are two different are all different things. And I don't know where this falls on it for me. I like at least the one aspect. I'm undecided on the others. For me, this works nicely as an epilogue. If you're somebody who really wanted a happy ending, spoiler warning, for The Matrix, this will work as that. But like any epilogue, you could kind of chop it off the book and you wouldn't necessarily notice either.
Right.
So if you don't want to see it, it's not going to burn you.
And it is
happening more as well, I would say.
Well,
it didn't definitively end.
No, but it ended well enough. It was open door ending, but it's not. It didn't scream to me, I must know what happens next.
Right, yeah.
Because it feels like it's going to be a lot of what happened in the other two movies again.
We don't need to do.
Right.
You
know, we should probably move on because we've been talking a long time about this film here.
And then, I also saw Psycho Goreman, which is a throwback to like 90s direct-to-video stuff. And if you're into practical effects and gore, you'll probably like it a lot. And I know some people really love it. I think it overstayed its welcome. It felt like it would have been a better like 30-minute Twilight Zone episode or the equivalent. Because it's fun, but it's a lot of the same kind of humor throughout. It's rough because it's low budget. Some people are eating it up. It reminds me a lot of Turbo Kid, but I enjoyed Turbo Kid a lot more. I had a lot more fun with that one. It does have an evil child in it, so hey, knock yourself out. I think that's on Shudder. You can watch it there. And then the other thing I watched was another video game adaptation, which is called Werewolves Within, based on a...
Game adaptation?
That is actually a video game adaptation.
I did not know that.
I think it's a Telltale Games video game, which is a kind of a horror comedy about, for the most part, people in Phil's home area, stuck in the middle of a storm, trapped in a hotel, and there's a werewolf that has killed somebody.
Yeah, we were offered...
Who is the werewolf?
We were offered a screener and interviews for that film, but I just... When I heard it was a comedy, I skipped it.
Of course you did.
Well, and honestly, that movie was so successful as a comedy for me personally that I can't even think of it as a horror film.
It's not. It is a comedy first, horror second. Although, I mean, they play the horror kind of straight. The comedy is that this is in the... It's not like Dracula Dead and Loving It. It's the werewolf thing is played straight, but it's just that there's wacky characters in it.
Yeah.
And it's the interplay between the characters.
Now, anything else, Mike?
No, I think that sums it up. I think that's it.
All right. So that's a recommend, you're saying? Everybody liked that?
I liked it. I mean, it wasn't great, but I liked it.
And you like it, Eric?
I thought it was a good comedy.
Okay, all right. Sounds good. All right, so the only reason I was trying to wrap it up quicker there was because we're 2 hours and 16 minutes in. So we should probably give our final thoughts on – well, there is no final thoughts, so we should just do our house cleaning. So, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Scansty Podcast. That's spelled Askncity. You can find it wherever you got this one. And – just as a kind of example as the kind of nonsense you might hear on that podcast, this is a text exchange I had with Dan. Dan texted me in the middle of the workday today out of nowhere, and he said, I made a burrito with butter and candied tart black cherries. I'm a genius. And I responded, that's not a burrito. He said, absolutely it is. The only burrito requirement is that it's wrapped in a tortilla. I responded, that's stupid. You can't wrap a tortilla around a wrench and call it a burrito. He said, yes, but that would suck unless you needed to beat someone with a burrito. Then it would be helpful, but still difficult to chew. And then I responded with the Captain Picard facepalm gif. So if you're interested in that kind of nonsense, you can find it on the Ascansity podcast.
Did you know that North Korea has announced that Kim Jong-il actually invented the burrito?
No.
He invented everything. He's God, remember?
I wish I was joking.
Mm.
It's true.
Now, it is such a natural
Korean dish.
Now, Mike, me, you, and Eric do another podcast that we just recorded an episode, and we're going to be recording one near the end of this month.
Yes, that is Cinema a la Carte. In which we discuss movies that are movies we are fans of, but not necessarily recent, and usually not horror films. they may be genre movies like Collateral or Hostiles or The Edge, but they're not outright horror films. And sometimes we go with a different type of genre like animated and Inside Out or science fiction like Flash Gordon
Drama
like Stalit. Stalit. Yeah, we did Stalit. And I think our next one in the pipe is another drama, right? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, first, yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah. I would call it a drama. It's a little bit of a throw up, but it's mostly drama. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So one. If you want to hear us talk about that, and the dates have ranged, I mean, like, you know, you've heard that. So I think Forbidden Planet was the 1950s, is the oldest one we've done. And then you get something like Hostiles, which was only like 2019, 2018.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, the one that we're about to do, I think, is going to be the newest.
I think about 2019.
Yeah,
it was pre. It was pre-plague.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So sounds good. So look out for the next episodes of those. One's in the can to be released later this month, and we're going to be recording another one, so it'll be released probably late February. And now me, Barrett, Sean Fox, and Kevin Letts are doing a podcast coming back up called A Discovery of Witches, Demons, and Vampires, the podcast, a podcast that talks about the weekly episodes of the television series A Discovery of Witches, which can be found on Shudder, Sundance, AMC, as well as Sky, I think, in the UK. Season 3 is being released this Saturday, which is the 8th of January 2022, and we are recording the episode on the 9th, and it should be dropping on the 10th or the 11th, and so we will continue that. We have a large lady fan base that listens to our podcast, and we get weekly emails from that, from a number of fans of our podcast, so looking forward to discussing A Discovery of Witches again on that podcast. And you can find that podcast both on this feed for Dark Discussions as well as his own feed, as well as Cinema a la Carte. And Barrett, me, you, among rotating guests, do another podcast?
Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews, yes. And we most recently reviewed the movie Spellbinder.
That's right. That's in the can to be released. But our last release of that podcast was the Tara Violet cinematographer. Yes. Yeah. Interview.
VP of Eye Without a Face.
Exactly. Exactly. So that was a good episode, too, which included myself, Barrett, Johnny, Noel, and Sean Fox. People can check that out both on the Dark Discussions podcast feed as well as on the Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews feed. So that's pretty much it. So this is another one of the bucket lists complete, and we will be back doing a film in our next recording, and keep a lookout for the end of 2021 review episode, which will come out near the end of January. And
Friday,
I guess
this actually kicks the bucket.
Indeed. So, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
Thanks for tuning in and listening to Talk About the Bucket List. Hopefully you can take one or more of our choices and watch them yourself and enjoy them. Come back next time. We'll have another topic.